I'm suiting up.
Welcome to Doctor 3, a Hearthstone podcast dedicated to giving you explosive growth in climbing the standard rank ladder. I'm your host, Daring Alkaline. Along with me is my fellow host, Nick Elias. So let's go ahead and review our poll question from last week. What is your go-to method to curb tilt while playing Hearthstone? Everyone's different, so no multiple choice. We're looking for you to reply and let us know what you do. So I was just reviewing this before we started, and it seems everyone has, varied ways of controlling tilt, but a lot of it's either, get up, walk away, take a break. Taking a break seems to be a very common one for most people. Play a different game, maybe go back and review your footage, and or just stop playing Hearthstone for a while. So I think all are pretty valid responses, whatever works for you, but I really like the actual just walking away for a little bit. I know that helps me personally. I know you said just keep grinding.
I'm in the minority, yeah. And my advice should not be applicable to everybody.
For sure. So let's go to news. Big announcement that for a limited time, we are having 23 cards rotate back into standard from wild. We get that list on Friday, but we have the first two in Ragnaros and Nazoth.
Yeah, there also was a leaked potential like list. I don't know if it's completely accurate, but the cards on the list include Ragan, Nazoth, as well as Sylvanas, Emperor Thorisin, and the Curator for neutrals, and then each class gets two cards. For Druid, that is Kun and Astral Communion. Rogue gets Shaku and Swashburglar. Shaman, Thing from Below and Evolve, Mage, Flamewaker, Babbling Book, Warlock, Imp Game Boss, and Renounced Darkness, Priest, Volgin, and Light Bomb, Warrior, Bloodhoof Brave, and Varian Wrynn, Hunter, Call of the Wild, and Lock and Load, and then Paladin, Mysterious Challenger, and Avenge. So we don't know if that is the confirmed list or not, but it was one that was leaked, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go on a bit of a rant.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because I'm not very happy about this.
Mm-hmm.
Not the cards coming back to standard. That seems like a fun thing. I don't know how impactful they'll be, but they, like, Ragan and Zoth were powerful when they were in standard. And it'll be fun to play with them again. But I'm extremely frustrated for the competitive side of this.
Yeah.
Because this is coming out. The list hasn't been revealed yet, and Bucharest is like 2 weeks away, the Masters Tour. For the people who spend months qualifying for this, mm-hmm. they're going to have like 2 weeks to learn a brand new meta. And on top of all of this, the actual list has been completely revealed to the GMs. The Grandmasters know exactly what cards that, like, if this list is wrong, like, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But they know for sure. They know 100% what cards are going to be. So that is a huge freaking competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Just for the select GMs who are already supposed to be, even though they're not really, the best players in the world in most cases.
So that's 36 player. Or wait, no, it's 16, 16, and 16. So
however many are attending Bucharest, because some of them don't always.
But it's 48 but that's a players huge... that know...
Yes, 48 players. It's a huge competitive advantage for them and creates this really stupid imbalance that these people can start to craft their decks and playtest against each other a whole week before everybody else even gets a chance to know what the heck they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell is wrong with Blizzard? I'm sorry, I'm pissed off. This is so stupid. You are giving a competitive advantage to a select group of players. This is destroying this. This completely ruins any sense of competitive integrity. I'm sorry. This is a joke. and this is not the first time Blizzard has done this, but they the esports team and the dev team seem to be like more on sync with this, because they kind of announced like right after this announcement that it would be like the cards would be available for Bucharest, so they kind of knew that this was happening, and they still went ahead and did it on this timing. What the hell got in their freaking minds to give a competitive advantage to a select group of people and change the meta 2 weeks before a major tournament?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time they decided to release a set 2 weeks, what, like 8 days before Worlds this past year.
Yeah, but like, that doesn't make it better. Like,
I know. I'm just saying.
This just makes them consistently bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is it's like this... This fits into their pattern of behavior.
Which is a freaking shame to any single person who wants to try to get into the competitive scene. First off, you can't anymore because of GM. Yeah. You just can't. But even if you're trying to, through this really stupid method of these grandmaster of these tours, you still get screwed. Holy crap, Blizzard. Holy crap.
Yeah, and it feels, I mean, it feels really bad, especially when, you know, they've already said the tournament at BlizzCon's just for Grandmasters, like...
And... Yeah, the World Championship is an invite-only tournament, like...
Yeah.
That's not a World Championship. Give me a break.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not sure if they think giving weekly content, you know, on Twitch 7 weeks in a row is worth, you know, alienating anyone else but these 48 players. I assume there's some equivalent in China for another 16 players.
Yeah, China's on their own system because of how their firewall works.
Yeah, it's a intellectual property laws and company laws within China, which is its own thing, but so that doesn't really count, but at the same point in time, it kind of, you know, always having kind of aspirations to maybe go to like a tournament one day, and that kind of goes out the window when you only have 3 major tournaments a year, and pretty much they're for the grandmasters and like high level players already, and it's frustrating. I feel like they had a system that was like could highlight players, and you know, you could go to one of these tournaments even if you weren't a top tier player, but you know, a good player could still make a run and still potentially work their way into seasonal playoffs.
Yeah, into the qualifiers.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now, I mean, we've seen some of the GMs already be tweeting like, oh, if I get relegated, I'm quitting Hearthstone. You know, that's it. And it's on the one hand, you know, that sucks. Like, the system is so bad that once you're out, once you're relegated, there's virtually no way back in. So why even continue? You may as well just quit. What? And then on the other hand, on this the cynical part of me is like 99% of these GMs were like super cocky and like, oh, you're just upset because you're not in there. And then now that once they're about to be kicked out, they're realizing there's no secondary support, and suddenly that becomes important again. Like, these guys don't care. They're looking after their own asses.
So I've heard, you know, I've been watching Grandmasters, so I know they've mentioned relegation. I don't know any of the details of it. So is it just, like, basically impossible to get back into Grandmasters?
I mean, you go into the same track that everybody else has had to go through.
Okay.
Which means that every season, the last person in each conference, so, like, 2 people per region, 6 people total, get relegated.
Yep.
So one person, or sorry, 2 people from each region get in across however thousands of people are trying.
Yeah.
So your odds to get in are astronomically low. So, you know.
Yeah.
This has been a problem. There's no secondary tournament support for anyone trying to become a pro. And now suddenly this is a problem when some of the pros are actually going to no longer be in Grandmasters. So,
well, yeah, I am.
So this whole thing kind of soured me on this wild card. Like, I'm on the one hand, I'm kind of excited to play with Ragnaros again. And then on the other hand, I'm reminded, like, how bad Blizzard is at, like, coordinating these things and just thinking about, like, the consequences of their actions.
Yeah, I don't know why this is, like, a... It kind of throws me off that this is, like, a standard thing and not just, like, another mode. You know what,
like,
I mean?
This, yeah, this would be completely solvable if they had another freaking server.
Yeah.
A tournament, not even a tournament like mode, but a tournament server where you could custom what the heck is being played. So the people on the ladder can keep playing with these cool wildcards and not have it affect Bucharest.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they not have, like, every single other pretty much competitive game has, like, a tournament server. Why doesn't this? It's been 5 freaking years.
Yeah, I know. It's like, one hand, they're like, oh, no, we're aiming at a more casual audience, and yet they have a professional.
You cannot use that excuse, because there is a competitive scene.
Exactly.
Whether they want it or not, there is a competitive scene, and they are supporting a competitive scene, so put the infrastructure in for the competitive scene.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, you can't make the argument of... Yeah, that we're like, oh, we're casual, because you're running an esports league and you've been running world championships since 2014. So
there hasn't been an excuse for a while. This is just complete incompetence or unwillingness to do anything because it doesn't, like, make them enough money. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe, like, they decided that, you know, the upside of actually having proper tournament support won't make enough money for them to justify it. In which case, just go away. Let somebody else do it. Like,
yeah, I kind of feel like Activision has more of a hand in this sense.
I don't know who it is, and I'm beyond caring. So
that's fair. That's fair. You know,
the other news that we got was that, yay, we finally get rewards for 1,000 wins.
Yay.
Which we have, I've been asking for about 4 years now.
I mean, new portraits, that's hard. It's hard. Okay.
It took 4 years to draw those. Come on.
Yeah. Okay, well, all right, let me play
devil. But serious, they do look really good. Like, I am excited to get them, even though I won't have any of them at the start.
Devil's advocate, if we would have gotten them years ago, we wouldn't have got this sweet, like, brown and white Jaina, because that didn't start until I think Battle for Azeroth. I'm not 100%.
I don't know it was in the expansion cycle, but it was Theramore. Okay. In the lore. The mana bomb at Theramore.
Okay.
That was... I don't know. Expansion cycle is.
Yeah, I don't really follow them quite as much, but yeah.
So, I know the story, I just don't know how it relates to the game.
It's within the past 2 years. That's what I'm saying.
A while. Like Cataclysm or something was like 4 years, 5 years ago.
Cataclysm was 2011.
Oh God, yeah. So this has been out at least Pandera.
It wasn't Pandera. It was.
It was around the time of Pandaria, though. Like,
was it? Okay.
Because I know that this is going so off course.
let's take this truck way off the rails.
It was Pandaria was at least 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure that Jaina had that streak before Hearthstone launched.
Okay.
So
well, that shows how much I know. Like, I felt kind of have been following the story a little bit here and there, but I thought it was much more recent. But
I love the story. I just don't play the game because I did that once, and
yeah,
I can't go back.
No, I'm in the same boat too. So that's why you just said Cataclysm came out. I was like, I know exactly when Cataclysm came out because I was playing when Cataclysm came out.
Yeah.
So
all right.
Okay.
Moving on, back to Hearthstone stuff.
Yeah, back on the rails. So this week we wanted to discuss finding your playstyle and finding what kind of decks speak to you as a player. Are you a control player? Do you like aggro decks, mid-range decks, combo decks, wonky OTK decks? I'm not talking legitimate OTK decks. I'm talking like crazy nutty decks. Do you like to build your own stuff? Like, it's pretty much figuring out, like, setting your goals in Hearthstone. And if you listen to this podcast, I assume you're probably more concerned about climbing the standard rank ladder, is that is our main focus. So it's kind of matching up with what you have fun playing with, what you can perform with the best. And I think that's probably the place I would like to start on that, is just kind of lining up your play style to a deck type. So where I want to start with this, Nikolai's first question, when you're trying to identify your play style, where do you start?
I think it basic. There are four main kind of decks, really. Combo, mid-range, aggro, and control. So I think it's just starting to break it down into those four categories. You know, experiment with them all, right, and see which style kind of speaks to you more. You know, is it like playing that hyper aggressive, I just want to go face style? Is it this minion board centric style, this grindy wear you out of resources, or this like one turn kill you kind of style? So like playing around with those and trying to find a particular one that really speaks to you more than others. There may not, like, I know for a fact that I play everything. Mm-hmm. My playstyle is a little bit different in that it's defined by the fact that I really hate mirror matches.
Okay. Well, that's a good...
I like playing good decks, but I hate playing mirror matches so much. So what I tend to do is I'll play like these tier 2 or tier 3 decks that have like a high skill ceiling that, you know, I can play competently and rank up with, but I'm not likely to see a mirror match, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you're identifying that you like good decks, but don't like mirror matches, so...
Oh my god, like, I'll play a control mirror. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I hate control mirrors. I will play an aggro deck. I hate that mirror. I'll play an aggro mirror. I'll play aggro versus aggro, you know? It doesn't matter what style I'm going up against. It's just this, going against the exact same like 30 or 29 cards. Just, I don't know if I find it like boring or frustrating or something. I don't want to deal with it. It's get it away.
So you find something that's on meta that has a little bit more of an execution gap, and then you kind of level up with something like that because it's,
yeah, most of the time. Like, sometimes cool. There'll be a deck that I find fun that is, like, tier 1. But most of the time, it's something in the tier 2 to tier 3 range with a high skill ceiling that I can just, you know, pilot confidently to take advantage of what I perceive to be a hole in the meta. And, you know, even if it has, like, a one or two bad matchups that are pretty common, you know, that's enough for me. Like, the Hunter deck that I've been playing, it doesn't do great against Priest, even if you mulligan the quest. It does better when you mulligan the quest, but it's still not that good. And Priest is one of the most common and popular decks, but I've been having success with it, you know? And yes. I haven't seen a single other person play a freaking Hunter Quest against me, so I've been happy.
I've seen your list a couple times come up, and I've played it too a little bit here and there. It's interesting.
It's so much fun.
It is fun. It's having blood, was it Savage Roar on a hero power that doesn't go away.
I would say, I guess the other thing I'm kind of drawn to is these cool, not necessarily like OTKs, but these cool combos that you can do. Like, probably my favorite deck of all time is Taunt Druid. So you get down the Hadjinox and you naturalize it and you make a board of taunts. And then you bring it back with Witching Hour and Carnivorous Cube like two more times, you know? Like, I don't know if that's particular. That's not like a combo deck, but it's a cool interaction, I would say, that, you know, those things I like.
Yeah, that was a really fun. You know what? I will say I am generally not a huge fan of the Mirror Match. There were a couple that I like. I do like Control Warrior versus Control Warrior because there's nothing quite as satisfying to me in that match is just grinding someone out and knowing that, like, I feel like you have to outplay them in that matchup in a mirror and time your resources and just, I feel like it's most of the time if it goes down to a really long grindy game, it's a skill. It's skill at that point in time. And I like that a lot. But I really also thought the Taunt Druid interaction was very interesting, especially when you started getting full boards of taunts and Hadronoxes and you're trying to solve that puzzle of who's going to get through first, who's going to take it, because then you have Hadronoxes coming out of cubes that spawn more boards of taunt minions. And
this was probably the least broken use of Carnivorous Cube that saw competitive play. Like, all the other ones are like, here's a giant charging Doomguard or King Crush or whatever at your face. This is like, here's a wall of taunts.
Yeah, Charged Devil Sores was another pretty
different.
Before Rush, Charge, Battlecry can't attack the enemy hero this turn. Turns out if it doesn't Battlecry, it still has Charge. So that got abused quite a bit by Carnivorous Cube.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I come down to it, I feel like I'm not a great aggro player, so I generally stay away from more aggressive decks. I'm kind of land in the control slash combo deck. One of my favorite combo decks was Shadowrock Shaman, because I love that deck. So much fun.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was so satisfying because the meta at that point in time was very aggressive with Heal Zoo and the Odd Rogue, and then you'd even have the Death Rattle Hunter, which was not aggressive right out of the gate, but put on a lot of pressure. Especially in the later stages of the game, which you had to get to because you had to draw your entire deck.
Pretty much. That was one of the few, like, I guess I wasn't tier one on the ladder, but it was like a tier one competitive deck for a while. And that's one of the decks I love to play. And I wasn't even annoyed at the mirror. The mirror was annoying in the sense that, like, whoever drew their, like, three or four combo pieces first, just won. But there was some skill to it. I don't know. Like, most of the time it just came down to, like, hoping that the other person Shadow Walk whiffed. It was really bad.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, that was like, come on, Zola, come on, Grumble.
Yeah, yeah. You're hoping for those two and then the Serenites to come out last.
Exactly.
So I didn't hate playing that mirror, but that's like one of the few.
Yeah. I think. So, yeah, I really, so what kind of identifies my play style is like when I look at me, I'm like, okay, so what do I like to do in Hearthstone? Well, I like big end game minions. I like big minions, and like goes back to originally playing Magic when I was like 8 and loving like giant green creatures.
I was gonna say you're a green player, aren't you?
As of recently, I've been playing more white, but that was like 4 or 5 months ago. So I haven't played a lot of Magic recently. And that was just because I wanted a good deck I could build cheaply. So I haven't really put any money into Magic. Regardless, so when I have all the cards, basically, and enough resources to build any deck I could really would want to in the meta, like, I'm liking bigger endgame things that do a lot of stuff. I like the combo. I like combos. I've always loved Maligos. Maligos is so much fun, and anytime I get to play Maligos, like, I'm pretty happy. So, and just getting that massive spell damage boost with, you know, Floop, and, you know, so that's kind of where I'm like, okay, well, then I like to keep my board clear until that point in time. And then, so that kind of leads me to be, I'm like, okay, well then I want to play a control or a combo deck because I want to do the really cool things at the end of the game. I want to last long enough. I like control shaman too. I played some of that recently, and I like just being able to grind my opponent. So I'm identifying myself as like, what I like to do in the game. Like, I like to be more conservative. I like to be in control during the game and deny my opponent, you know, clear their stuff and heal up, build my board, and just basically say nope. And that's kind of where my play style, like, that's how I've kind of always identified my play style. And I've played a whole bunch of, you know, decks. I've played aggressive, I've played Facehunter, Zoo Warlock, you know, Odd Rogue, played some Odd Rogue back in the day, and like, I never quite have as much fun with those decks because, and this is like one of the things that bugs me about Priest, even though I know Priest is really good, but when Priest isn't doing anything, it feels really, really bad. And when they have all the answers, which I don't feel bad that they have all the answers. It just feels bad that I'm like, wow, this sucks. I'm like, this is supposed to be an amazing deck, and like, I'm doing nothing with it. Like, I've drawn no heal, no one drops, no two drops. And it's just like, I'm sitting here like twiddling my thumbs as they clear my board after like I try and build a board. I'm like, well, this isn't going to stick, is it? And it just feels bad. And so like when I'm running out of resources and like my opponent still has like 20 life, I'm just like, this sucks. So that's one of the things that I am not a primarily aggressive player. So
that's fair. I think a good thing to note for our listeners is to be flexible. A deck that you may not enjoy at one point, like, you may come back to it a few months later and suddenly something clicks. You know, that happened to me several times, in fact. It happened to me with Miracle Rogue. It happened to me with Freeze Mage. It happened to me with Secret Mage. And a lot of the times, these things happened after a major change, and there was less people playing those decks. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started playing Miracle Rogue after Small Time Buccaneer got nerfed.
When people were like, hey, Water Rogue's the new thing, I started playing Mirkarog. After Icelands was rotated to the Hall of Fame, I started playing Freeze Mage, you know?
Yeah.
I started playing Secret Mage after, like, the sixth iteration of it, you know? I don't know, like, there were a bunch of times where Secret Mage was a deck and I just never picked it up. And then after, I don't know when it was, it may have been after Explosive Ruins was printed, I actually started picking it up.
Oh, so good. Explosive Ruins. That was an aggressive deck I actually enjoyed playing because of Luneth. Like, having that refill on a stick, that was something that was very satisfying to me. It was like, okay, I get to spend my hand and then draw three cards at the end of the turn.
Yeah, I just checked. It was the last month between Kobolds and Catacombs and the Witchwood that I started playing it.
Okay.
So just things change and your perspective on things can change as well after playing against it. So just mm-hmm. be flexible, and even if something's like don't try not to stick to one play style. You know, like if you enjoy control decks, that's great. Have fun with that. But control decks aren't always going to be in the meta. So if you're in that state, try and find something that plays similar to what you enjoy, even if it's not, even if it's not a control deck. Maybe there's like a grindy mid-range deck that is good, that speaks to you, you know? Just try and, you know, play around with the decks going around, and just don't try to say you're a control player or you're an aggro player, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That may be what your primary focus is, but, you know, look around, see what else is going on, see if there's a deck that really speaks to you.
I know I've watched a lot of professional level play, and something that generally helps me, especially after I see like a deck, I'm like, wow, this deck seems very good and I don't know what I'm doing with it. I will take it, you know, if I want to play that deck, if I want to try it, I will take it to casual, and B, I will find people playing that deck and I will watch them play that deck. To try and understand, so like watching streamers, if you can find a streamer streaming a deck that you want to play, and getting someone else's perspective on that, that is something I find very helpful, because I know I have been able to make some better decisions while watching someone else play. And I don't know what that is. Like, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but some reason I feel like I can make better decisions when someone else is playing. And I'm like trying to like play the game in my head without looking at the other player's hand. And that's pretty easy when you're watching someone stream. So you're kind of like, okay, I do this, this, and this. And then they say, well, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this is the reason why.
So you're a real backseat driver there, are you?
Yeah.
No, it's fair. No, it's totally a good idea to, when you're watching somebody, to think about what you would do in their situation. But as to why, I think it is definitely easier when there's nothing on stake for you.
Yeah.
You know? It doesn't matter what happens if they win or lose. If you say, I think that you should take a risk and do this, and then they do it or they don't do it and lose, you know, it's a lot easier because there's nothing at stake. It's a lot harder when you're the one who actually has to pull the trigger on that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if there's a lot on the line, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
To your, you know, taking in casual, the best way to learn how to beat a deck is to play it.
Yes.
You'll see that deck will draw dead so often. And you will see that, you know, when you go up against what your archetype is, you know, you'll get blown out sometimes. And you'll see, okay, this is how This is how this deck loses. You know, a good deck has less than a 60% win rate. When it's 60%, that's insanely high win rate. You know, most decks are pretty close to 52%. Like, 52% is a really good deck.
Mm-hmm.
So just remember that. Like, they will draw death a lot of times. And that's how they get a lot of their losses.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's how it feels like when I'm playing. But it's one of those things that I can never wrap my head out around on, like, I can logically understand that, but, like, when I'm playing the deck, it feels, like, a certain deck, it feels unbeatable, and that's happened to me in more than one game, where I'm like, oh, this is a really dominant strategy, so, like, I'm like, alright, well, let me switch to this, because this seems to be a really good strategy, and then I start seeing all the shortcomings of it, and then I'm like, oh, well, I could beat, like, I'm getting beat by these things I could have already been doing with X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, I don't know if this was related to Hearthstone or, like, League of Legends or something, but it's a 30-40-30 rule.
Okay.
30% of the time, you're going to win the game completely regardless of what your opponent does. 30% of the time, that's going to happen to you. And you need to focus on that 40% where your decisions actually matter.
Okay. That's actually...
So, really, like, good. Part of it is, like, not screwing up that 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have the busted nut draw, don't throw it away. But focus on that 40%. Because those are the games that matter. Those are the games that give you that 60% win rate.
Yeah. So... And I think that's about gonna do it for us this on this topic. We kind of went off the rails a little bit, but we're all talking about, I think, just focusing on things to keep us getting better. I really like that 30-40-30 because I feel like that is so true, especially, I mean, in a lot of games, but in Hearthstone, I would say, when things are so draw dependent, it's just like, there's just some games you, like, you feel like, wow, I couldn't do anything. Like, literally, he had all the answers to anything I could have done. And there was one out I had, and I couldn't draw it.
Yeah, there is a significant number of games where your decisions don't matter. And that sucks. And that is one of the most frustrating things that I still deal with, you know? Like, I want to play decks where my decisions matter, and that's not always going to be the case. So just understanding that, and I know this is kind of going to the tilt thing, but, like, mm-hmm. trying to put that aside as much as possible and focusing on the next game, and not taking that information as
an excuse.
Not using that information improperly. Like, if you made the right play, but you just got completely blown out, don't use that as, like, confirmation bias or whatever, that you should do something different, you know? Sometimes you have to take the 70% play,
mm-hmm.
and 30% of the time you're going to be wrong. And it is still 100% of the time to be right to do that 70% play.
I know I found myself going, like, well, I have probably, like, a 7 to 12% play to stay in this game, and this is the only play that will give me that, and it doesn't come true, and it's like, well, yeah, that sucked, but that was the only out I had. And I think that's important too. It's just always playing to your outs when you're playing a deck that fits your play style. I know we kind of got a little bit away from it, but it's just, when it comes down to it, we'll wrap up here, is it's all about personal preference. But as Nikolai pointed out, try everything, because you want to be fluent with all kinds of styles. And as Nikolai pointed out, the best way to beat a deck is to play it and learn it, so you know its weaknesses and how to exploit it, pressure points and whatnot. So
if you want to be able to climb the rank ladder, especially if you want to make that legend push. You need to know what you're going up against.
I'd say that's...
And you need to know how you're going to beat it.
I'd say that's probably the most important thing, is knowing what cards are going to be in your opponent's deck. And sometimes you won't, because they'll have wacky techs. But most of the time, you have a good idea of what's there, and you can play around it.
Sometimes they'll be playing the Hunter Quest and Zephyrus.
So good, though. It's so good.
It's so much fun. Like, it is. I think I finished in the top 200. I don't know, because the leaderboards are don't get published for a while, and I can't go back and see the old one. But
mm-hmm. I mean, that deck seems legit, and like, I couldn't figure out. So real quick before we wrap this up, what are you looking for with that deck to beat Priest? Like, what?
I'm tossing the Mulligan most of the time, unless I have Questing Adventure, and even then it's like questionable, because okay. Questing Adventure doesn't do a lot, but it's hard not to keep those. But assuming I don't have Questing, I'm really looking for Spring Paw, Dire Wolf, and sometimes Knife Juggler. I'm looking for a way to kill a Northstrike Cleric.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, what kills it super efficiently? Like a Timberwolf
Timberwolf and Spring Paws. Like, if it's kind of... Spring Paw is the most important card, but a lot of the times it's like, I hope they don't have a Northstrike Cleric. And having just like a one drop into a two drop into a three drop, like Annual Companion, mm-hmm. like having a curve that can fight for the board and not just let the Northstrike Cleric farm cards is super important. Zephyrus is super important because they make large minions, and Zephyrus can give you Mass Dispel or Shadow Ward Death or something to get rid of that large minion or okay. minions. And then, like, as the game goes on, like, Swarm of Locusts, like, your quest doesn't matter. Keeping their board clear is the only thing that matters. So anything that can interact with their board quickly is great. Anything that can, like, not give them a huge advantage while being sticky, like Snip Snap, is great. Trying not to be weak to Wild Pyromancer.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, one of the times I lost to Priest, is they had the double Pyromancer plus the double... I can't remember what it's called, but it does one damage to everything. Holy Ripple. And what?
Holy Ripple.
Yeah, Holy Ripple. They had two Pyros and two Holy Ripples, and I wasn't expecting that. I got blown out. Because I had a board of one ones, because I dealt with their Pyromancers, and then... I don't have a board anymore.
it's hell. Playing against Priest is hell right now.
They don't normally have one, let alone two. So that's not as much of a concern.
Yeah, but... yeah. It's just one of those like one-off scenarios. So
yeah.
Okay. So I thought of the poll question this week, and either I will post it since Mage is without internet and he is moving, or he has moved, I should say, and he's getting everything set up. So the question for this week has to do with playstyle. What is your preferred playstyle? And we'll go aggro, mid-range, control, combo. Pretty straightforward. And just let us know, you know, where you fall on the spectrum. And if you want to leave a wonky fifth type.
Tempo is not a style.
Tempo is not a style. That's either...
Tempo Mage is not a thing. Tempo Rogue is not a thing. Tempo is not a place... Stop it. Stop
it's a
it.
Deck type. It's a deck type.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's a name. Hey,
I think I know what we're going to talk about next week.
When someone says Tempo Rogue, you know what's in that deck. So
it's the name of a deck, but it does nothing to describe the deck.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying it is a deck because you know
it's
what
it is. It's
a
deck name, not a deck type.
Precisely. Now we're playing semantics.
Yeah.
Okay. So that will do it for us this week. Nicholas, you want to tell everyone where they can find you, and then I'll wrap up?
I am on Twitter at Nicholas123.
You can find the show on Twitter at Dr3HS. You can email us at Dr3HS at gmail.com. I didn't have a chance to review iTunes or Gmail before the show started, but I will keep my eye on those. We'll review anything we got. Well, actually, I should say we will read anything we got next week on the show. With that, the reminder, the contest is going through October 11th. So if, as long as you have your review in before Friday, October 11th, let's say 11:59 Pacific Standard to cover everyone in America, you'll be entered in a chance to win one of two 1 hour coaching sessions. And just a reminder, we have a top 200 host here who already was giving coaching on Gamer Sensei. So seems like a pretty sweet contest to throw your name in the hat. All you have to do is let us know what you think of the show. So with that, and you can find me on Twitter at Daring Alkaline. So, and that is going to do it for us this week. And you've been listening to Dr. 3.
Boom.